and welcome to Locked On Astros, your daily Astros podcast. Here are your hosts, Eric the Man Heisman and Brett H-Town Wheelhouse Chansey.
We are Locked On Houston Astros, and we hope that you join us for a daily Locked On Astros podcast. My name is Eric Heisman. You can find me on Twitter at EricTalksTros. You can find the show at Locked On Astros, your team every day. Brett, where can they find you at?
They can find me at HL Wheelhouse, and they can find me at Stros411 on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Always positive, always Stros.
And we have special guest Jim Callis. Where can they find you on Twitter?
I'm at Jim Callis MLB on Twitter. So, and I try to interact with people as much as I can on there, and glad to be here with you guys.
All righty. And I'm sure you get a lot of questions about prospects in general, and definitely the Astros farm system is something that we're definitely going to be looking at in this edition of the Locked On Astros podcast. I know that we've come on and you've been very high on the Astros farm system. This time it may not be as positive, but I'm sure there are some good pieces still left. But we'll talk about that and more on this edition of Locked On Astros podcast. You can get Locked On Astros podcast on Podcast Snap, Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in car, tell your smart device played podcast, Locked On Astros. We kind of talked about that in a little intro there, Jim, but what is the current state in your opinion? I don't know if you've come out with the rankings for the actual the farm systems yet, but in your mind, what is the state of the Astros farm system right now?
Yeah, obviously it's changed. I mean, if we were talking, 7-8 years ago, they had one of the best farm systems in baseball, and it paid off with a World Series championship and another pennant and four straight, championship series appearances. Right now, I don't think there's any question. It's one of the thinner systems around. I mean, these things happen. It's kind of cyclical in that when you're not doing well, when you're in the rebuilding phase and you're trading for prospects and you're picking at the top of the draft, it's easy to build up a farm system. And then when you win and you're picking at the bottom of the draft and you're graduating guys to Houston and you're trading all kinds of prospects to get Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander and Zach Greinke, it kind of thins the system out. I mean, it's, we have not done new rankings yet. We will, in the next week or so. But they're one of the bottom five farm systems in the game right now. And, not that it's solely based on how many top 100 prospects you have, but they've got one top 100 prospect. And to be honest, if we were doing the list today, I don't know if you put Forrest Whitley on the top 100 prospects now that he's having Tommy John surgery and he's going to have not yet another year and really 2 years sidetracked by injuries and whatnot. So yeah, their system is, in my mind, kind of going through a reloading phase right now.
So with the whole minor league system being, shaken up by the teams being cut and having fewer teams, do you think that makes minor league systems stronger because you have fewer positions available, or does that make it harder to develop talent when you have fewer farm teams for players to develop and move through the ranks?
I don't think we'll see. I'm sure there'll be ways we don't anticipate that it'll change development. I don't think it really impacts either of those ways. At least I don't feel like it will right off the bat. I mean, when you're talking about having limits on the number of players you can have in the system, I mean, it's not like you're getting rid of good prospects. You're getting rid of the so-called organization players who are there for your best prospects to have teams to play on. So it's not like, I think you'll still have the same. I mean, yes, the guy who would have been drafted in the 28th round and worked his way to the big leagues, maybe that doesn't happen anymore. But I think for the most part, that you'll still have the same amount of future major league talent in these systems. And, I think having fewer teams, you'll have to, I think teams will move players a little bit more quickly. I think the guys who aren't highly touted prospects, if they don't perform, they might be gone after a couple of years. But I don't think the new system, other than affording you the opportunity to have more players and maybe, stumble on a guy or polish a guy up who wasn't a high priority guy, I don't think it's going to be a major difference, with the new reduced minors right now?
Yeah, there's just not as many spots for these guys, and so you're going to have a lot less players. That's what you're trying to say there. So, kind of going back to the Astros farm system, I know that after the Drayton McClain era, when he sold the team, the Astros have gone through a big period of winning, and they did that by making a whole bunch of trades to go through that long period of time of winning. And but when the when Drayton McClain sold the team to Jim Crane, they had a very barren farm system. And I don't want to say that's where the Astros are right now, but the Astros have gone through a big window of winning right now. But the farm system's not as bad as it was at that time, right?
No, I don't think it's as bad. They have some guys you can point to, and I think there's more depth. But at the same time, at that point, I don't think we realized how good Jose Altuve was. I don't think we realized how good Dallas Keuchel was. And I don't know if there's necessarily a Jose Altuve or Dallas Keuchel in the farm system right now either. So I think you can look at it both ways. But I think the difference, with those two scenarios is, at the end of Drayton McClain's regime, they just hadn't drafted well. They drafted poorly, for a number of years, toward the end of the 2000s, and it killed the farm system. I mean, they did have guys who were better, than we realized, your Altuves and Keuchels. I think Kike Hernandez was in the farm system at the time too, and there's going to be guys like that. But I don't think it's fallen apart through, bad drafting or anything like that. Like I said, I think it's just circumstances have been different. They were winning, and they've used a lot of prospects to basically help bring talent to the big league club. And we'll see. I mean, and even though they do, rank toward the bottom of our rankings, and I think most people's farm system rankings right now, I mean, there's always players that are interested in you. And, I always joke farm systems are, prospects are like kids. Everybody likes their own, more than everybody else does. And I'm sure, the Astros have high hopes for a lot of guys in their farm system. I mean, they have a number of interesting players.
So, Brett, real quick, before we go talk about Built Bar, I know that Jeff Luhno and the organization kind of went away from the scouting department a little bit. Do you think that kind of hurt them a little bit with that kind of scouting talent in general?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it this way. I mean, you could talk, teams use different combinations of in-person scouting, data and analytics, algorithms, and teams put different amounts of weight on different stuff. In my mind, the more data you can get, the better, whether that's having boots on the ground and seeing guys firsthand and getting to know players' makeup, or whether it's, getting spin rates and exit velocities and launch angles and induced vertical movement and things like that. So, in my mind, yeah, I would think it'd be fair to say that in general, if you cut back on your scouting, it is going to have a negative effect. I don't think you can just do everything off video. I don't think you're as effective scouting players off of video and say off of, various metrics and cutting back on in-person scouting. So yeah, I don't think that's helped them.
So speaking of that, it is March Madness, and let's go and talk about Built Bar. Built Bar is doing a tournament. So who is the matchup today, Brett?
All right, so we've been telling you about Built Bar, how it's the best-tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. It's amazing, low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, amazing-tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate on all bars. And Jim Callis, if you have not checked out Built Bar, you need to. And I'll give you a promo code at the end of this. So today's matchup, Wednesday, the 17th, is peanut butter versus coconut puff. This is almost like two different flavors from two different sports. It's almost like hockey going against football. They both pack a real punch. They both taste really good. But who is your pick? My pick would be coconut puff. Those things are outstanding. So check that out today. Go to builtbar.com or at built_bar on Twitter and vote for who's going to win the matchup. And remember, use the promo code locked15 to get 15% off your next order. That's locked15 to get 15% off your next order at builtbar.com. And check back to see who's won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar in the world.
And guys, we're great at covering everything you know about the Houston Astros, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with the Locked On Today podcast. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's got everything you need to know every morning in under 20 minutes. Follow the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcast and check it out. So today we are talking with Jim Callis, and we're looking at the kind of the system of the state of the Astros podcast, not the podcast, but the Astros.
You want me to weigh in on the state of your podcast?
No, it probably is not very great at the very moment. But let's go ahead and talk a little bit more about this. So now that the Jeff Luhnow era is over, we're kind of talking about the scouting department. And I know that in the wake of the scandal, the Astros have lost the first and second round picks for the 2020 and 2021 seasons, drafts, I guess. How bad do you think that's going to hurt them in the long, the short and long term?
Yeah, I mean, it hurts. I mean, because you're talking again. I mean, you know, a farm system you're trying to rebuild. And again, I mean, the farm system did its job. I mean, they won a World Series. They won a pennant. They went to four straight American League Championship Series. I mean, even last year, I mean, I don't think there are a lot of difference makers necessarily, you know, but they had 15 different rookie pitchers help the Astros make the playoffs and get pretty close to the World Series last year. But like losing those picks, I mean, you're talking about, you know, four players who, I am just talking, I guess, in general here,
if you had your first and second round picks last year and your first and second round picks in this year's draft, theoretically, I mean, I would think that would be four of your top 10 or 15 best prospects in your system. And it's not, you know, with the bonus pool system we've had for the last decade or so, it's not like the old days where you just say, okay, well, we'll just give $2.5 million to our third round pick and $2 million to our fourth round pick and make up for it. I mean, you can't do that. You know, your signing bonus pool gets cut down too. And I think, to be honest, it hurt also in that by only having a five round draft last year and losing two picks, you don't get the opportunity to move money around, you know, like in round 6 through 10 and shifting that money and getting a guy. I mean, I do think, you know, that they were fortunate last year in that, you know, I kind of like their draft considering they didn't have two first round picks last year, or their first second round pick. You know, Alex Santos, I mean, high school pitchers are risky, but you know, he's got a really good arm. They got him with a supplemental second round pick and they paid him over slot. Tyler Brown was one of the best, you know, relief prospects in the draft. They got in the third round out of Vanderbilt, and he's a guy who I think they're going to try as a starter, and he's interesting. And the fourth round, they got a guy, you know, they rolled the dice on him. But Zach Daniels, you know, is tooled up and did not have a long track record of success. He really struggled a ton his first 2 years at Tennessee and in the Cape Cod League, and played great for 4 weeks last year, although not against SEC competition before the season shut down. And then they took him, and he's a guy who, had he gone out and had he, you know, had a good SEC season, he might have been a second round pick. So I think they compensated some for what they had, but like it there's no doubt it hurts you. Cause again, I mean, whoever they would have taken with the 29th overall pick in the draft, I think, you know, probably would have been, you know, one of their top five prospects right now. At worst, he would have been maybe their fifth best prospect. And the second rounder, you know, we had Alex Santos as our 11th prospect on our new Astros list, you know, so I'm assuming that, you know, whoever they took in the second round would rank ahead of him. So yeah, I mean, the those are big penalties because you're losing out on four pretty good players there.
And see, when that's mentioned from somebody outside of this podcast, because we hear all the time, oh, you know, the Astros weren't punished. The Astros didn't get enough punishment. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, losing those draft picks is a big deal. I don't recall them busting the Yankees and the Red Sox with the iPads and taking away their draft picks. I didn't see them taking away the Red Sox draft picks after 2018.
Well, the Red Sox did lose a draft pick.
Oh, they
did. The
Red
Sox lost a draft pick in last year's draft. They did not have a second.
Oh, I didn't. Yes. Okay. You know what? I didn't know that. Okay. I'm sorry. So basically, I guess my point is that, you know, you always hear people talking about how the Astros kind of got off scot-free. And, you know, I get that, but that is huge. And like you said, with having only five rounds, you know, the Astros have done good in later rounds. They also have Hunter Brown, who was, I think, a fifth round pick,
right?
And he was a guy that was kind of a steal in the fifth round, so he's doing big things right now. He's catching a lot of people's eye. So, you know, that's just phenomenal. So do you think that the Astros will need to go into rebuild mode in order to build the farm system back up?
Yeah, well, I'll put it this way. It's a lot easier to rebuild your farm system when you're trading veterans for prospects. I don't anticipate that they're going to do that. I mean, I think they're still favored, should be favored to win the division this year. I think it comes down to, what happened. They obviously lost, Gerrit Cole and George Springer's free agents the last couple of years. Are they going to lose Correa? What's going to happen with the pitching staff? Are they going to be able to keep a viable rotation going? If they wind up, let's say it's worst case scenario, let's say the Astros win 75 games this year and Correa departs as a free agent, then maybe they kind of commit to more of a rebuild. But I think if they go to the playoffs again this year and they re-sign Correa and they still have a pretty nice nucleus and some pitchers emerge, then it's probably going to be, hey, let's try to keep this window open as long as we can. And, we'll deal with the farm system when we deal with the farm system.
So I know that the Astros don't want to have I know you mentioned Forrest Whitley. We'll talk about more of him in the next show. But the Astros don't have a lot of top 100 talent, but they have enough depth to kind of contribute over the next few years, right?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I don't know if they really have impact guys. Like for this year, Luis Garcia, who was up a little bit last year, looks like, he'll probably contribute. I know they've had like a COVID outbreak and I haven't kept up with that, but like, I don't know who else you're going to look at this year. And I don't really see Luis Garcia as like a prime, rookie of the year type candidate. I do like Hunter Brown. I think you're looking at him end of 2022. Pedro Leon's interesting, but unproven at this point. I like Jeremy Pena. I don't know that I like him as much as maybe some other people do. I mean, I think he's one of their better position prospects. I want to see more with the bat till I really believe that it's a bat to where you're going to be playing that guy every day on a first division club. But I think they have guys who can contribute. I don't see a lot of difference makers that are going to be up in the next couple of years. So I think kind of what you have on the big league team right now is what you've got. I mean, you can see, and I don't mean this as a knock on these guys, but George Springer left. And it's like, okay, we're going to try to see if Miles Straw or Chaz McCormick can take over in center field. I mean, I respect those guys. I'm not even convinced those guys are an everyday player on a mediocre team, let alone a contender.
Alrighty. So it sounds like Jim Callis is not betting on Miles Straw to be the center fielder. So,
well, he might be. I just don't know. Like the thing with Miles Straw, and it's funny because it goes back to when he was prospect eligible. We rank him as a prospect, and I would get besieged all the time by Astros fans who are like, why don't you like this guy more? And my point was, look, the guy can really run. There's no question he can play defense. But I mean, how many guys do you see who have essentially zero power? It's a very extreme opposite field, no power approach. And I mean, you're talking about a guy who hit 305 in the minors. And do you guys know what his slugging percentage was in the minors, even though he hit 305?
No, it wasn't.
Pretty low.
379. Like, I mean, they're just that's a very difficult profile to play regularly in the big leagues. Even in the majors, I mean, he's gotten 200 at bats and he slugged 322. And I think too, when you have better defenders and more prevalent shifts in the big leagues, it just makes it tough. So I like Miles Straw coming off my bench, playing defense and running and pinch hitting. I don't think if I'm trying to contend, I want Miles Straw playing every day for me.
All right, so it sounds like Jim Callis is betting on Miles Straw having a low slugging percentage. So, Brett, tell us a little bit about betonline.ag.
Yeah, BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all the sports action. Football is over, we know that, but NBA is in full swing. College basketball and the NHL are in full swing as well. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Yordan Alvarez just played in his first game this week in spring training. You can see he's up there and where his numbers are for the most home runs on the season. Head to the website and use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, your sportsbook experts. Promo code locked on.
And when you're watching the Astros games this year, why don't you get a Belching Beaver beverage? Where can they find those at?
Well, they need to go to belchingbeaver.bev because they need to find out where in Texas they can find this. They just came to Texas. They started in 2012. They're in the Oceanside, California area, but they partnered with us. Why not? Because we are Locked On Astros, and they were our offseason acquisition. And after after a long day at work, I like to come home to an India Pale Ale Belching Beaver Mango IPA. It is available year round, and it is phenomenal. It's delicious, and it's a fruity IPA without the punch to the face. The Amarillo and Simcoe hops complement natural mango flavor for a juicy, tropical, well-balanced beer. Belchingbeaver.com, here to have damn good times.
All righty, and Jim Callis would like to hear this, but in my fantasy baseball league, one of the most added players right now is Miles Straw, because a lot of people see that.
Because he steals.
Yeah, steals, and he potentially being the leadoff guy. So if you want to know if Miles Straw is somebody you should go add, why don't you go ask Scott Cullen of the Fantasy Baseball, Locked On Fantasy Baseball podcast. He's a veteran fantasy analyst. He's somebody who uses data and nearly two decades of fantasy baseball experience. He can tell you who to pick up during a waiver wire. He can season long fantasy baseball, dynasty leagues, DFS, whatever you do, Locked On Fantasy Baseball podcast covers it all. Subscribe to Locked On Fantasy Baseball wherever you get your podcast. And let's go and get back to the Locked On Astros coverage of the Astros prospects with Jim Callis. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit more about the Astros farm system. And I want to talk about the shift of Jeff Luhnow's thoughts on scouting to James Click, kind of coming from the Rays. The Rays were kind of focused on the development of players. We saw how they like to focus on the cheap talent. So do you think that we're going to see a shift of the focus on developing talent with James Click in the running the team now?
Well, I mean, I really think under Jeff Luhnow, I mean, they tried to develop talent, and then their priorities changed when they started to win. I have not noticed, I'll be honest, I can't tell you. Have they hired more amateur scouts since James Click has been there? I don't know that they necessarily have. I do think that when James Click left the Rays, it's certainly fair to say that the Rays, I think, were more invested in scouting than the Astros were at the time that Jeff Luhnow left. But I, you know, again, with the pandemic, I don't think people have really been adding employees that much. And so to be honest, I don't know that the Astros have necessarily gone out and said, hey, you know, the last I checked, I think the Astros might've had fewer amateur scouts than anybody. I don't think that's changed. So I think that's kind of, we're going to have to wait and see.
Well, I think the timing has been bad too. We're
right
middle of a pandemic. So yeah, I think that has something to do with it as well.
So with the Astros, I know that they have really been, I guess, making waves with the international free agency, with the international draft market. How would you rank the way that they've utilized their picks? You know, they've got talent coming up like Jeremy Pena.
He was a U.S. guy though.
Jeremy. Oh, he was? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. You know, guys like Pedro Leon, you know, I mean, obviously they're, I guess the holdover from Luhnow was the discovery of Yordan Alvarez, but the Astros seem to have some guys.
That was a trade too.
I know. But how do you think you see them working through the international free agent market compared to other teams?
I think they're okay. I don't think they stand out necessarily. I mean, you know, they did get Pedro Leon, you know, like they're, you know, there's a, it's still, you know, you're signing these guys as technically free agents, but you have a bonus pool now that limits how much you can spend. So it's not like you can just go out and like you could, you know, even 5 years ago and sign $45 million worth of players if you wanted to. You know, Leon is certainly interesting, you know, but unproven. You know, I think if he hits, he has a chance to be a star. I mean, he's really interesting. But you know, I'm just looking at our latest, you know, top 30, you know, where I think they've stood out, honestly, more so than the big ticket guys, is getting guys, you know, like they've really excelled at finding pitchers on the international market who aren't, you know, like signing them to like five, you know, a lot of cases, low five-figure bonuses and polishing them up, and they become pretty good players. You know, Christian Javier wasn't a high-profile signing. Framber Valdez wasn't a high-profile signing. Jose Urquidy wasn't a high-profile signing. You know, we talked about Luis Garcia, who's currently on their you know, top 30 list that we just released. You know, he signed for $20,000 out of Venezuela. That's actually where they've gotten the most bang for their buck, is finding these pitchers who, you know, are – I don't know specifically what is the Astros look for. I mean, look, it's no secret for all of us, for the farm system, they have a lot of guys who throw four seam fastballs and high spin curveballs, and I think they do. I think they have a pretty good idea of what they like to look for in pitchers and what kind of guys they can polish them up, because they've done a really nice job with that. I think more so than hitting on the big ticket guys. I will credit the international scouting department for Jordan Alvarez, because I mean they did trade for him, but he had not even made his pro debut when they traded for him. So they did like him. Yuli Gurriel was a big ticket, veteran Cuban free agent who wasn't subject to the bonus pools. But if you look at the big league club, like I said, the majority of the guys who were on the team last year were smaller signings. A lot of these pitchers they really polished up.
Yeah, Framber Valdez was one. And I said that if you really want to punish them, that the international market, the signing pull bonus would be a good way to get them. So to kind of wrap up this show, what do you think, as not just with the Astros, but minor leaguers as a whole? I know that they had the alternative training site, but do you think that not having a 2020 minor league season is really going to limit how much you're mostly on the pitching side? Do you think it's going to limit how much teams are going to be able to use their pitchers?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a concern. I think in general, there's just the alternate site. I mean, you weren't really playing games there, and instructionally, it was a way to get more players in, but you're not playing a lot of games there, and it's kind of a controlled environment. And neither of those is anywhere near as good as being able to have a minor league season, which we couldn't. And I do think, just from talking to teams, and we'll see how it plays out, I don't think teams in general are going to look at it like, okay, there was nothing in 2020. I think they're going to look at it, and I'm just using guys, not saying that this will happen specifically, but like Hunter Brown, okay? He had only played in the short season New York Penn League. In 2020, he probably would have gone – he would have at least started the year in low class A, I think. He's from a smaller college. I think the Astros are going to look at him and say, okay, what he did last year, we're going to consider that the equivalent of having been in low class A, so he goes to high class A. We talked about Jeremy Pena before. And when we last saw Jeremy Pena in 2019 – he was in high class A, and then he went to Arizona Fall League, and he would have played in double A last year. They may send Jeremy Pena to triple A this year. All that said, so I don't think it's going to necessarily slow down the best prospects in a farm system. I think they're going to keep those guys moving along like they would have had we had a normal 2020. But what you hit on is my concern, and I think teams are going to have to be very, very careful with pitchers, because you're going from 60 games to 162 in the big leagues. You're going from, I know guys threw on the side and at the all side and struggle. That's not the same as pitching in tense game professional innings. You're going from zero to 120 games in the minors. Even on the amateur side, college guys are going to be going from 15 games and no summer ball to 60 plus, if they go to the NCAA tournament and then to pro ball. And I think, teams are going to have to be very, very careful with pitcher. It's tough. Again, let's use Hunter Brown as an example. So Hunter Brown pitched 23 innings or 24 innings in 2019, coming off of college season. My guess is he probably would have pitched around 100 last year, 100, 110. And then you would have gotten him up to, 140 maybe. I'm just pulling numbers out here, but 140, 150 innings this year. I don't think you can go 140, 150 innings with Hunter Brown this year after not having a 2020, even though he was, got some experience here and there. So I think they're going to have to be extremely careful, like everybody in baseball, starting at the major league level all the way on down and even to the amateur level, you're going to have to be very careful. I mean, it's hard enough to keep pitchers healthy without having, seasons, canceled or severely curtailed.
All right, guys, that's all we got for this episode of Locked On Astros podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with Jim Callis to talk a little bit more about the players, specific players. We'll be talking about Forrest Whaley, a little bit more about Pedro Leon, Corey Lee, Peter Solomon, and some others. You've been listening to Locked On Astros podcast, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.